हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रीराद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सत्य नाम प्रभु महाराज
ओह वाह थैंक यू
Okay, page 31, Adhyaya 2, Adhikarana 4, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost Purana. Sarva Sambhadini. But the Brahma Sutras are also included in the Vedas. They can be used as proof, but their meaning is very deep and expressed in few words. Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan, commentary. The enumeration of the Puranas occurs in the chapter describing the results of gifting the Puranas. What will be the gradation of inferior and superior natures by which the superior one will be distinguished? Vedas are quoted to show that Sattvika Puranas are superior. Suta Goswami spoke all 18 major Puranas at Naimisharanya, and the sages present accepted them as authentic. Nonetheless, three groups of six Puranas each are meant for three different audiences, depending upon which of the three modes of nature predominates each audience. But for each individual Purana, the situation is more complex because most Puranas display some mix of the modes. For example, the pastimes of Lord Krishna and those of Lord Ramachandra, which are the mode of pure goodness, are described to some extent in most of the Puranas. In the Padma Purana, Uttara Kanda 236, 19 through 21, and 18, Lord Shiva describes which Puranas belong to each mode. O beautiful one, the Vishnu Purana, the Narada Purana, the auspicious Bhagavat Purana, and the Garuda Purana, and Varaha Puranas are all belong to the mode of goodness. They are all considered auspicious. So Padma Purana is not including itself? Padma Purana is not including itself? Oh, Padma, there I didn't see it, okay. Okay, know that the Brahmanda, Brahma Vaivarta, Markandeya, Bhavishya, Vamana, and Brahma Puranas belong to the mode of passion. And know that these six Puranas belong to the mode of ignorance. Matsya, Korma, Linga, Shiva, Skanda, and Agni Puranas. Having divided the Puranas into three classes, according to predominating mode, the question remains as to which one to accept as authority. The Puranas glorify various deities, and commentators often try to establish their own favorite among these as supreme, arguing on the basis of logic and apparently conclusive scriptural references. One consequence of this partiality is that commentators tend to denigrate those Puranas in a category different from their own. Proponents of Tamasic Puranas tend to reject the authority of the Rajasic and Sattvic Puranas, and vice versa. But there cannot actually be several absolute truths. Therefore, the question of which Puranic deity is the one supreme truth remains to be settled. For the unbiased seeker of the truth, Srila Jiva Goswami shows how to resolve the matter. He explains that sattva, the mode of goodness, is clearly superior to passion and ignorance. And as Lord Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, 4:17, quote, from the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance develops foolishness, madness, and illusion. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:224 also states, tamasastu rajastasmat sattvam yad brahma darshanam. Passion, rajas, is better than ignorance. Tamas. But goodness, sattva, is the best, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth. 1:224. So you can understand, realize the absolute truth from that. But then to act within that, to commit yourself to the absolute truth, that'll be pure goodness. Right? Because then you get realization. But even that understanding comes because of Krishna's grace. In the passage where this verse appears, Suta Goswami is explaining which form of worship produces the ultimate good. His opinion is that one can achieve the ultimate good only by worshipping Lord Krishna, the personification of pure goodness. The citation from the Matsu Purana in the previous Anucheda states that the Sattvic Puranas glorify Lord Hari, Krishna. By contrast, the Rajasic and Tamasic Puranas recommend worship of other deities. Such worship is in the lower modes of nature and does not lead to realization of the absolute truth. Thus one can tell the modal quality of a Purana by seeing which deity it recommends for worship. Right, so the point is, the Purana is not in that mode. It's written for an audience that's in that mode. Like that. That's why all of them can be used as authority. Right? But at the same time, as we're establishing that, since it's written for those in the mode of goodness, it must be giving a higher conclusion. Right? It means it's making it obvious. We can see is that it's all of them are making the conclusion that it's about Krishna. Right? But the Sattvic Puranas make it obvious, while the Rajas and Tamasic don't make it as obvious. Just because of volume. Right? Another way to tell is by how it commences. In Sattvic Purana, a questioner will approach a learned speaker and inquire from him about the absolute truth. The questioner may ask the speaker to elaborate on the nature of ultimate reality, the supreme religion for all, the ultimate benefit a human being can aspire for, how one should prepare for death, or a similar topic. Such questions then allow the speaker of the Purana full freedom to explain these topics. The speaker, who is self-realized, free from all gross and subtle material desires, and concerned only with the welfare of the inquirer and those who hear the discourse, either then or in the future, replies with answers that are specific and unambiguous, leaving no room for misinterpretation or confusion. Examples of such Sattvic Puranas include the Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, of course the Bhagavata Purana. In the Rajasic and Tamasic Puranas, however, the questioners inquire about limited topics but do not address the ultimate concerns of life. For example, in the Linga Purana, the sage at Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami to narrate the glories of Linga, Lord Shiva. Although Suta Goswami has fully realized the absolute truth, he is perfectly competent to explain it. Questions here restrict him to speaking on the particular topic of Linga. He is not free to explain the deeper meaning of life. Since all Rajasic and Tamasic Puranas have this shortcoming, they cannot be reliable sources of knowledge about the essential topics of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. The Puranas were arranged in different modes to respond to the various desires and interests of the conditioned souls. Nevertheless, each Purana contains glorification of Lord Hari, the absolute truth. Srila Vedavyasa included this glorification so that even persons in the lower modes could gradually develop interest in the Supreme Personality of Godhead while hearing or reading the Tamasic and Rajasic Puranas. Right? In other words, it's predominantly the other, and then you throw in just a little bit. Yes. Right? So this is what we're meaning of the slow path, is that you're being exposed to the higher levels, but because the volume is so much on the level that one's at, then one doesn't necessarily take it very seriously. Right? What we see in the Sattvic Puranas, then the emphasis will be on Vishnu, and in the Bhagavatam, then it's exclusively on the Lord, on the pure devotional service.
The speaker of the Purana, they are all Krishna conscious.
Yes, yes, it's all Suta Goswami.
Also, yes, but they speak according to the audience.
It means it's like They're discussing the Puranic topics because there's 1 billion verses. Yes. So they're discussing, because the topics in the Purana, then you have these five major areas, right? You have the primary creation, secondary creation, then the history of the Prajapatis, the Manus, and the kings.
Yes.
So in that, and somewhere, like we say in here, that Shiva that is manifest. But in Linga Purana, then that will become a prominent discussion about the nature of Shiva and these kind of aspects. So it's just taking that area of the Puranas and putting that together. So having spoken so much, right, then Vedavyasa then compiles this knowledge. And so compilation, he'll take what will be interesting to that audience. Because it's not saying that necessarily that's how many verses he spoke, Sutta Goswami, but that's how many Vyasadeva documented. Because we have to understand is that there's 1 billion verses, so it has to be limited. So in this, there's going to be so much detail. So if we get too much into detail, we many times forget the main part. You know, just like, let's say we're having a management meeting. You can, in that meeting and trying to affect, you know, good management, possibly, and getting into the techniques of it and what's correct and what's not, may get distracted from why you're actually having the discussion. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's that kind of aspect happens. So one has to see is that's the difficulty when you're dealing in the secondary branches of knowledge, that the Bhagavatam will always keep them in the context of their support of the primary. Always. So it's very hard to forget. Even to the point where I've heard it said that some have the opinion that Bhagavatam's only philosophy. There's no practical things in there. Because it's always mentioned in connection with the primary. And we're not used to, for us, practical means just secondary, exclusively secondary. You know, like that. And devotional is exclusively primary. The two don't mix. Right? So that's the difficulties, because it's always presenting like that. People don't catch how that is the position of the secondary. And it's able to do. Yudhishthira Maharaj can be fully Krishna conscious and manage an empire. Right? And so the Bhagavatam showing that connection, how that connection is made. The detail of the management, that's other places. Other Puranas, the Itihasas, you know, there, Arthashastra, there you'll get details. But the connection to the Lord, that's the most essential. Right? Does that make sense? Just like Manu, so that's constantly going, so then you'll catch that. But let's say like Manu Samhita. Now if a conversation comes up about Manu, and the question comes up, okay, well, what does Manu say? Right? It's always going to be someone steals something, they lose some fingers. Right? That's the only thing I've ever heard quoted from that. Like that. So, but the whole opening chapter is all about how the primary creation, the Lord's there, and then there's Brahma and the secondary creation. So it's showing how everything's coming from the Lord and how Krishna then made the four varnas, and that to take care of the various aspects of the creation, like this, so that the Vedas would be taken care of by the Brahmins. The people would be taken care of by the Kshatriyas, the cows, and that would be taken care of by the Vaishyas, and the Shudras would assist. So that, but you can probably guarantee that if a discussion comes up about Manu, that point will never, ever, ever be brought up. Or the invocation, where he says, we'd like to hear about a Varnashram in its connection to the Supreme Lord. So it's not that these sages don't know about Varnashram. They want to know about it, how it connects to the Lord. You know, it's just like, let's say, if the devotee asks, you know, so I'm working, I'm doing all these things, but how does that connect to Krishna? Does that infer that he doesn't know how to do his work? Right? So that is the whole aspect. But that won't be caught. So now when mana just goes into detail, then we forget this point. Right? So that's what Narad Muni's talking about. Is that people will just remember what they should do, they'll avoid what they shouldn't do, and then we see in this case they don't even remember that, you know, what we should do and not do in the secondary, but remembering the primary just doesn't happen. So that's then what's unique about Bhagavatam, is it's just bringing out that aspect of how the secondary connects to the primary and how the primary is the actual only real thing. Is that... From this analysis, we can conclude that in our quest for the ultimate Shabda Praman, we need consider only the Sattvic Puranas. As the Padma Purana states, Sattvika Moksha Dha Prokta. The Puranas in the mode of goodness lead to liberation. Right? So if we're looking for absolute truth, we have to go that direction. A question is then asked, even though we accept Sattvika Puranas as superior for discerning the highest goal, the highest goal is defined as having qualities, having no qualities, composed of knowledge only and completely unconscious by various types of crooked logic. The Sattvika Puranas glorify the Supreme Vishnu and his incarnations. But in the material world it is rare to find the mode of goodness unmixed with the lower modes. And this state of affairs is reflected in the Puranas. Several of the Sattvika Puranas describe the worship of God in mixed modes rather than in pure devotional service, right? Because why it's there is because it's addressing, the Puranas are addressing everybody in every position. So even when we're addressing the Sattvika Puranas, so generally you'd be then considering that this is devotees, or at least those who are nicely following, you know, or brahminical or like this. But even there, there'll be mixes. Right, so in the beginning of devotional service, there may be mixed devotional service, and so then it's reflected here on how to connect it to the Lord. Several of the Sattvika Puranas describe the worship of God in mixed modes rather than pure devotional service. So Valadeva Vidyabhushan poses the difficulty as stated above in the form of a question. Hence, after reading all the Sattvika Puranas, therefore, one may still be uncertain whether Lord Vishnu is ultimately person or impersonal. Right? So that's the thing. So that'll get you, it's about the absolute truth from the Sattvika Puranas. But whether the absolute truth is personal or impersonal, that's going to be the question. Or manifest of the universal mind, or even a product of matter. To resolve the problem at hand, right, because we see Vedantists can come up with those ideas. To resolve the problem at hand, we need to identify a prime authority that can reconcile all other texts of the Vedas. Then, continuing with Baladeva Vidyabhushan, though Brahma Sutras may be suggested as the explanation of the Vedas, various followers of sages like Gotama do not accept this. Why should we give regard to other sutras when the Brahma Sutras are accepted? Even then, some sages give other meanings to the sutras, which have deep meaning and few syllables. Then, what is this commentary called?
Jiva Toshai.
Okay, what does that mean? Okay. So, Jiva Toshai. Having established the superior nature of the Sattvika Puranas, more doubts arise. These texts have been understood in many ways by great thinkers. Some interpreters have found that they are variously glorified. The path of yoga, bhakti, or jnana is supreme. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami suggests the Vedanta Sutras as a possible basis of reconciliation. Right? Because it's taken from the Vedas and giving the essence, and so from there then we can establish. The Vedanta Sutras written by Vyasadeva certainly incorporates the essential understanding of the Vedas and Puranas. But the dedicated followers of other sages who wrote philosophical sutras such as Gotama and Patanjali might not accept the conclusions of the Vedanta Sutras. Even if the followers of other philosophers could be somehow convinced to change their minds by logical proof of the greater authority of the Vedanta Sutras, the situation is still problematic. The sutras of Vedanta are terse and esoteric, and acharyas of various persuasions have commented on them in such a way that it's difficult to decide whose opinion agrees with that of Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Okay, then Baladeva continues. The answer is now given. The ultimate scripture should firmly establish the meaning of Brahma Sutras. The heart of the questioner then becomes clear. You have spoken correctly because you have revealed by your questioning the Srimad Bhagavatam, the king of all scriptures, which is proved, approved by me. So this is Baladeva speaking, or this is... Yeah, no, this is... So Sarva Sambhadini is only this one
yeah.
line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the rest is Baladeva. Okay, so then... Now that's approved. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is then the one that will reveal everything.
Mm. Yeah. In what you read just today, it means we can conclude that Bhagavatam is a real, the topmost Purana, because there is no other option. Because there is no other option, I can say.
It's not so much there is no other option, is that it was written in that purpose. Just like Vedanta Sutra is written as the conclusion of the Vedas. And so then one could say, okay, if you can't understand from the Puranas, you go back to the Veda. Right? Because if there's any problem there, you go back to the Veda. And so going back to the Veda there, because we were having problems with the Vedas, then the understanding is giving in Vedanta Sutra. So in this way, then Vedanta Sutra becomes the authority. Now the difficulty comes is that many different authors, these great sages, then they have written their own philosophies, and some of them agree with and some of them don't with Vedanta Sutra. So then that's already a problem. Because they've made their own sutras. Instead of Vedanta, like Vyasa's made Vedanta Sutra, they made their own sutras. Now, Venice pointed out, even if you get them all to agree that, okay, it is Vedanta Sutra, then the problem comes up, they can come up with, from the Vedanta Sutras, whether the Lord's personal or impersonal. They may make a mistake. Though Vyasadeva's pointing out as personal. But because they're very terse, you know, they're very short in the amount of syllables. Because in these things, when you're writing sutras, you're writing in syllables. It's not so much words, it's syllables. You're trying to make it very exact and as short as possible. So then it's terse and it's very deep. So just like, let's say it uses the syllable ka. Right? So we may have an understanding of that or not, but ka means Lord Brahma. Right? And so then in the context that's there, it may be referring to Lord Brahma, but in ordinary usage, in that situation, it might not be. So these kind of technical things, the depth, may not be caught. So now, you need an explanation of Vedanta Sutra. If we're taking Vedanta Sutra, but how to establish this absolute personal or impersonal, then that natural commentary, that's Srimad Bhagavatam. So, it means of all the Vedas, the sattvic, and of the sattvic, the pure Shuddha sattvic Purana. Then it takes from there. And then you take from the Vedic, then you're taking the Vedanta Sutra, that established, but then the natural commentary on that Bhagavatam. So for both directions, Bhagavatam becomes the authority. Right? So therefore, we interpret any other scripture according to the authority of the Bhagavatam. So there's no question of it's contradictory. The interpretation will always be according to how Bhagavatam gives, because Bhagavatam is the conclusion. And another literature might be giving a direct or indirect or, you know, some kind of figurative meaning using some kind of aspect. So you take it according to what the Bhagavatam says, then it makes sense. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then, just like we approach the previous acharyas through our acharyas, so then what Srila Prabhupada says, that's how we approach anyone else. So it makes it very, very clear exactly what is authority. So Prabhupada's comments on Srimad Bhagavatam then are the Vedic authority. And through that we understand the other acharyas' comments, the other acharyas' works, other works of the Vedic literatures, all that we understand through the Bhaktivedanta purports. Does that make sense? So it's very, very exact science. So there's nothing left to chance.
And now if we don't accept 100%, there is room for...
There's room for doubt. But then that means then we don't have that faith to be situated as such that the anarthas will go and the taste for chanting the holy name will come. Because that's the whole thing, is those anarthas when one has the faith that this chanting process is the only process, then that means the anarthas go. But as long as we're holding on that there's something, because the something else means there's pure devotional service, something else means it's an anartha. Right? So if we're holding on to anything, that would get in the way of pure devotional service. Okay, Adhikarana 5, identifying and glorifying Bhagavatam. Anuchedas 19 through 26. Adhikarana Prakashita. After arriving at the conclusion that Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence of all the Vedic literature, is the topmost Purana, it is apt to elucidate its glory. Hence, this Adhikarana, consisting of the next 8 Anuchedas, describes in detail the splendid nature of Bhagavatam and its unique features, which leaves no room to doubt its position as the highest Pramana. In this Adhikarana, Jiva Goswami first explains how Srimad Bhagavatam was manifested by Srila Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva, after compiling the Vedas, Puranas, and Brahma Sutras, was still not satisfied because of not sufficiently glorifying the Supreme Lord directly in these works. Hence he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are described sumptuously from beginning to end. In this topmost achievement of all of Vyasadeva's literary efforts, it is the natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras, and it is of the same spiritual nature as Gayatri, the fountainhead of all Vedic mantras. Right? Because you have Om as the Mahavakya, from Om comes Burbhuvaswa, from Burbhuvaswa comes the Gayatri, from the Gayatri comes the Veda. So if Srimad Bhagavatam is, by its nature, a Gayatri, then that means it naturally is a commentary on the Veda. Then he delineates various topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam by quoting references from other shastras to ascertain its sarup. Here he cites references that list distinctive features of the Srimad Bhagavatam to defeat the arguments that the quotations stated earlier to delineate the topics of Bhagavatam may refer to other Puranas having similar pastimes, and also to prevent incorrect interpretation of the topics mentioned. Right? So he's going through the Bhagavatam to give the topics, because the topics themselves to be a Purana, they all have the same themes. Right? They're all talking about the creation, secondary creation, Prajapatis, Manus and kings. Otherwise they're not a Purana. Right? And so then, that's there. Then besides that, within that, since they're giving histories, it's all giving true history, then in a conversation, all the different historical things are all connected. Right? So that means so many of the main stories will all be the same. It's just according to the audience or what topic you're discussing as the main thing, then you will bring out various aspects of that pastime. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here he's saying he's giving from the Bhagavatam so that you know what's there in the topics. And because in the other Puranas the topics are there, they may give a different angle, seemingly. So to make sure that you understand it's not that angle, Bhagavatam has its own. Right? Because that's the authoritative angle. From that you see the other Purana. You know, like we mentioned, because we know the Bhagavat Purana, then we know in the battle with Bhanasura, then Krishna fought with Lord Shiva. And then in that fight, Krishna shoots a yawning weapon, and that makes Lord Shiva so tired he leaves the battlefield. He's unable to fight. So, in the Linga Purana, I think it's there, it'll mention the same scenario, but it doesn't mention that Krishna shot a yawning weapon. So it's not that it's telling an untruth, it's just not revealing all the things. It says that Krishna and Shiva started the fighting, and when Krishna picked up his weapon, Lord Shiva yawned and left the battlefield.
Yes.
Right? But it doesn't say that he yawned because it was so boring. But yes, by just saying that much, someone in the mode of ignorance will come to the conclusion that Lord Shiva just thought, this is so, you know, just so unimpressive. I'm not even, it's not even worth me getting involved. So he leaves. So if we know the pastimes from there, then we'll try to interpret the Bhagavatam ones according to that. But he's giving these topics here, the stories here, because no, we interpret the other Purana stories according to Bhagavatam.
Yes, yes.
Right? So much of the time he sees there's less detail. Or if there's more detail, it'll generally be a secondary aspect that's not so important for a realization of Godhead. Not that it can't be appreciated, just that seeing that you have 7 days, you have to choose your verses. Right? Is that what it says? Yeah. For all these others, like, you know, we're saying, what is it? The skandhas, 81,000 verses. So it's basically like, you know, three times the size of Bhagavatam. So you don't have to worry about it. It appears that at that discussion, that there was not a limitation of time.
Also, another point here is that after you prove that Bhagavatam is the highest, some of the other groups, they claim ours is the Bhagavatam, like Devi Bhagavatam.
Okay, then that's another one. Yes, there's so many stumbling blocks.
That phrase lists the distinctive features which refers only to the Srimad Bhagavatam as the Vaishnavas.
Yes. Okay, very good. After this, the author proves that Bhagavatam gives the conclusive meaning of the Mahabharata and is superior to it. This is because in Mahabharata, only the Moksha Dharma portion is directly related to Lord Narayana, and other sections are mixed with topics such as Kamya Karma, polity, charity, and so on. Like, you know, because the Mahabharata is to get everyone to be religious, right? And then the idea is that at the end, it's trying to bring you to that higher position. But we find that people really appreciate the Mahabharata but don't necessarily come to that position. By contrast, the Srimad Bhagavatam, all topics tangential to the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are left out. That means who are tangents.
Yes.
Tangential. That's cool.
Mathematics.
Tangential. Okay. Yes. Okay, finally, a word that we can use from the math, right? The entire Bhagavatam speaks only and directly about the glories of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it is superior to the Mahabharata. He further extols the glories of Bhagavatam by citing from Garuda Purana that Bhagavatam is the form of Gayatri. Gayatri bhasya rupaha. Since Gayatri is also a description of Bhagavan, and Bhagavatam begins with a verse having the same meaning as Gayatri. Since Bhagavatam's outstanding qualities are thoroughly established, Jiva Goswami declares that persons desiring the highest results should study Bhagavatam. After he proves that Srimad Bhagavatam is revered by a lot of great saints and thinkers, by enumerating the commentaries and essays written by several acharyas on this scripture to elucidate its glory, this leaves no room for doubting the potency of the Bhagavatam. Srila Jiva Goswami further affirms the glory of Bhagavatam by declaring the unique position of his chief speaker, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who is respected as guru by all the sages. Sukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam in answer, because you see, even Brahma and Shiva came down to hear this one. Everyone came from throughout the universe, right? It means there's a pastime here, the Hamsa Bahan. Lord Shiva is known as, you know, the writer of the Hamsa, of the swan. He borrowed his father's, his ride, right? You know, he was worried he won't get there in time, so he borrowed Lord Brahma's swan carrier to bring him down so he could get down in time to see.
So, son borrowing father's car for party.
Yes, it's an eternal principle like that. Not necessarily that you're going to get very far, should try to, that the son is trying to convince the father, but it's been going on for a long time. Sukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam in answer to Parikshit Maharaj's question in an assembly comprised of sages from all over the universe. That means the conclusions of the Bhagavatam are accepted by all the assembled sages. Because we don't hear, which included propagators and followers of various philosophies, we don't hear that such an assembly came to hear other Puranas being spoken. We only hear the Bhagavatam. Because it's known, it's the topmost. It means throughout the universe. Maybe around here, some people don't understand, but in the universe it's understood this is the top. Right? Just as Srila Sukadeva Goswami is compared to an effulgent moon among the starlight sages, so is the Bhagavatam among all other scriptures. Right? You know, the stars are nice and they're bright and all that, but the moon, you know, is in its own category. Finally, he sums up the glories of Bhagavatam by defining it as the direct representative of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, in conclusion, he proclaims Bhagavatam as the independent and topmost Shruti, as stated in the Bhagavatam itself. Right? So then you see here that you have all the opening, the reasoning, the all the different things, and then here's summing it up, and then the conclusion. Right? So the Adi Karana is complete.
It's a nice effect.
Yes, yeah. We see it just works very nicely. That's why it's given as, that's the method. That's why we see in Ayurveda describes this. Because if you want mental health, you have to use this as the system. Then people go, you know, it's just like someone's talking and that he's saying this, but then there's this other thing like that, but then should we consider this, and then over there like that, and then people can't actually be healthy. Right? Does that make sense? So it gives how logic works so that the mind and intelligence will be healthy.
But it takes some time to adjust to that.
Yes, because we're not used to healthy conversations. Yes, we're used to not very healthy conversations. Yes. Anucheta 19. Having manifested Puranas, which were already there, having composed the Brahma Sutras, Vyasa was still unsatisfied. He then manifested in Samadhi the natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras, in which there was a harmonization of all scriptures. Thus it begins with a reference to Gayatri, which represents the meaning of all the Vedas. The Sarupa of the Bhagavatam is explained in Matsya Purana. So for Matsya Purana, it is called the Bhagavatam, which describes the killing of Ritasura, and in which Dharma is described in detail after referring to the Gayatri, Matsya Purana 53:20. Right? Because Ritrasura, just by mentioning that, because in all the 18 Puranas, Bhagavatam is the only one that has this story of Ritrasura. Right? Others don't have that. They have many stories that are common, like churning the milk ocean and Nrisingadev and Ramachandra and that. But they don't have this Ritrasura. So just by mentioning that, it means Bhagavatam alone. Does that make sense? No, it's only in Bhagavatam. That's the point. It's only in Bhagavatam and none others. Well, so many other stories are common to all the 18 Puranas, but this one story of Ritrasura, the killing of Ritrasura, is only in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right?
I think the churning of milk ocean is mentioned almost in every Puran.
Yes, even in Mahabharata it's mentioned. You know, it's popular. I mean, Lakshmi comes from there, and you know, all different nice things that people like come from that. Churning like that. So,
you know, to the fight.
Yeah, the fight. You know, yeah, it's the whole thing. You know, Shiva gets his blue throat like that. Dhanvantari comes with the nectar. Mohini Murti. Yeah, so it's a happening story that way. The person who writes out Bhagavatam and gifts it, placing it on a golden throne on the full moon of Bhadra month, attains the highest goal. It is known as the Purana with 18,000 verses, Matsya Purana 53:22. Right, so here you're attaining the highest, because I think in the Bhadra month, in the full moon, that's also then when you do the worship the Pitris. Like that. It means you may all go throughout, but that one, then the Pitris are saying, because you have so many offerings, depending on what the offering, you get a certain length of time for it. But the best is considered if you offer sweet rice. Right? Not porcupines and, you know, wild boar and all these kind of things, which people do offer. Like that, they give less and less times. But by that, it's considered to be unlimited. you know, unlimited means in terms of the higher planets, right? Mm-hmm. It means we're considered, oh, it's unlimited. It means it's still limited, but, you know, like they're deathless, you know, that kind of thing. But it means it gives the longest effect. So they have a prayer that when will our descendants offer us sweet rice on this full moon in Bhadra? Like that. So we see here that's a special month, because that's also Krishna appears in that month and that. But here then it's Bhagavatam, and placing that and then respecting that, then giving that in charity, then that's the highest position. So it's even higher than all these other worships that go on. The reference to Gayatri is the word Dhimahi, which invariably occurs in the Gayatri mantra and is placed in the first verse of Bhagavatam. The whole mantra is not given, since it is not proper to directly show the original form of mantras. But other words in the first verse indicate the meaning of Gayatri. The word Janmad Yasya Yataha and Tene Brahma Hridayadi Kavaye indicates the Lord who is the shelter of all the planets and who inspires the intelligence of Brahma. This is similar to the Gayatri mantra, which prays that our intelligence may be inspired by the Lord. Dharma Vishtara, in the quote from Matsya Purana, means the detailed description of the highest Dharma, Bhakti. That is indicated in Dharma Krojita Kaitavotra Paramaha, the supreme Dharma which completely rejects cheating, in the second verse. This means Bhagavatam presents meditation on the Lord. This will be explained later. Anucheda Prakashika. In this Anucheda, Jiva Goswami explains how Srimad Bhagavatam is the crowning achievement of all of Vyasadeva's literary efforts. He also explains that it is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras and is of the same nature as Gayatri, the fountainhead of all Vedic mantras. Srila Baladeva Devushan, commentary. Okay, so there's no, Jiva Goswami doesn't give a comment. Okay, it's not on this. Okay.
Generally, Maharaj Sarvasambhadam is only on philosophical grounds.
Oh, okay. Srila Baladeva Devushan's commentary. Vyasadeva was unsatisfied with the Puranas and Brahma Sutras because the sweetness and highest powers of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, were unclear and secret in the manifested Puranas and Brahma Sutras. He was satisfied with the Bhagavatam because in that work there are statements showing the Lord's exceptional powers and sweetness. Riti. Krishna Dvaipaya Vyas is the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Thus he is often called Bhagavan, a title reserved for Lord Vishnu and specially empowered servants of Vishnu like Lord Shiva. Nevertheless, Vyasadeva accepted the pastime of having to face doubt. After organizing all the Shrutis and composing the Vedanta Sutras and Mahabharata, he felt dissatisfied. He doubted whether people in Kali Yuga would understand the mysteries of the personality of Godhead's opulence and all attractiveness, since in all the works he had produced, these were never fully revealed. Kimva bhagavata dharma na prayena nirupita priyah parama hamsanam ta'eva hyachuta priyah. I think I have mostly failed to describe the principles of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, which are dear both to perfect beings and to the infallible Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.31. Thus, Srila Vyas knew that the source of his dissatisfaction was, knew what it was, but he needed to hear confirmation from his spiritual master, Narada, along with specific instructions on how to remedy the problem. Sri Narada Uvacha, Brahmanu dita prayam yasho bhagavato malam ye naivasau na tushyeta manye na darshanam kilam. Sri Narada said, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. Srimad Bhagavatam 158. So, in other words, if something is written, it's not about pleasing the Lord, then what's the point? Aho Mahabhaga Bhagavan Amoga Dirik. Like you mentioned, that one devotee went through Prabhupada's books, you know, at the time, and from the purports lifted everything about grihastha life and compiled it, and like that, the idea was he'd have a manual for grihastha. He brought it to Prabhupada, Prabhupada looked through it, said it was useless. Right? Now, it's from his purport, so why would it be useless? Because when we're dealing in a purport, then it's establishing, you know, some connection to Krishna. But then it will give some, the details of examples and all that, that are secondary attributes that we're using to convince somebody of the concept, then bring it back to Krishna. Right? Because you start from the point there's a doubt, you clear the doubt with something on that level of the doubt, then you bring it back to the transcendental position. So he probably didn't bring out those aspects about how the grihastha, the most important thing is, you know, devotional service or this or that, that kind of aspect. He just dealt with directly things that were how husband and wife or the parents and children or, you know, that kind of thing dealt, or like, you know, their money, you know, the charity one and all these things. And so then it would just be, you know, just not about pleasing the Lord, it's just about technicalities of being a grihastha, and that's already being given in the Vedic literature. So that's, otherwise how would it be useless, right? Yes.
Even on the technical level, unless one sees the source, it will ultimately fall. Like, can you put it this way? It will ultimately fall off. So that's why it is actually completely useless, even if it is just a secondary. Because secondary on its own will never function for...
Yeah, secondary on its own, it has to be connected to the primary to work. But it's a descending process. It's not an ascending process. By doing this, then naturally it will connect to Krishna. I do fabulous management, naturally it will connect itself to Krishna. No, you and your consciousness have to connect it. Right? So you might have a manager who's not doing so well, but he's thinking of Krishna and trying to please. And someone else who's an excellent manager who's not thinking of how it's connecting. He's just managing well according to his nature. But the one, it actually takes on good quality devotion, and the other one doesn't, even though it's technically nice, because we look at it, the perfection of the secondary is good, because that's what religion is. Religion is secondary. It's taking the secondary aspects, using them in a pious way, or what's recommended, or the proper way that gives results, and then connecting that to Krishna. But that's why Krishna says you give up this religious approach from down to up and start with bhakti. Then you engage religion. Right? Because if you're religion, you're starting with bhakti and then engaging religion, it's just called bhakti. But if you're starting with religion and then connecting it to bhakti, right, then it's basically called religion. Right? Yeah. O highly fortunate one, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in transcendence. You should think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.13. Right? So, he's saying, Nara's saying he has complete, he has perfect vision, his fame is spotless, he's firm in vow, situated in transcendence. You should think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance. With that, then you can liberate the people in general. Right? So it's only by connecting to the Lord will people actually be freed from misery.
Since the Adam and Eve is spiritual master of yesterday, he empowered his disciple to realize the absolute truth.
Yes. Yes, well that's the thing, is he's thinking this, but he's taking that role of the disciple. So he's thinking that this is the problem, but he wants it confirmed by his spiritual master, and then what to do. So he's pointed out it does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord, so it's useless. That's the problem.
Yes.
Now, what to do? By meditating on the Lord, that's what makes everything work. And so by doing that, that will then liberate the people in general. That will make everything auspicious. And at the same time, is now that you have Bhagavatam, using Bhagavatam to understand all the other literatures that he's already read, written, now they become perfect. So it's not that, we throw out all these other literatures. No, it's that the conclusion hasn't been given. Now that it's been given, from that, now you study anything else, you'll see it in that context. Right? So that's the point, is that in bringing out those essence from the other Puranas, it should always be from the perspective of the Bhagavad. Srila Prabhupada's commentary on this verse. People in general on this verse, meaning the
1513.
Srila Prabhupada. People in general have a taste for literatures by instinct. They want to hear and read from the authorities something about the unknown. But their taste is exploited by unfortunate literatures, which are full of subject matter for satisfaction and material senses. Such literatures contain different kinds of mundane poems and philosophical speculations, more or less under the influence of Maya, ending in sense gratification. These literatures, although worthless in the true sense of the term, are variously decorated to attract the attention of the less intelligent men. Right, so they're worthless in the true sense, because they don't bring you to the absolute truth. They don't bring you anywhere near or even on that. But they are variously decorated with the different kinds of, literary elements, the different aspects of rasa and all that, to make it attractive, right, to those who are less intelligent. Thus, like Rupa Goswami says, quoting from Bharat Muni, that if you want a drama, it means a literature or anything to be attractive, then you want to use the themes of chivalry or conjugal rasa. And you generally see that those who put those together, that it works. Like you have the Iliad, right? And so it is a big war, the biggest at the time, and it's all over conjugal rasa. Does that make sense? So if there's a war and 1,000 ships set out for this battle, then you think, okay, it's a big war. But if those 1,000 ships are being launched because of the beauty of this one girl, you pay more attention to this battle. You understand? So that's what that Prabhupada is pointing out. That they are, although worthless in the true sense, are variously decorated to attract the attention of the less intelligent men. Because he could have just said Agamemnon got upset and he got his friends together and they had a total of 1,000 ships they sent out. But no, you have to say is, about Helen, how she's the cause of 1,000 ships being launched. Right? Then, now, you're going to pay attention. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what Prabhupada's talking about. They're able to use these technical points. They're supposed to be that are there for good writing, but they're supposed to be to bring you in the attention, the connection of the Supreme Lord. Like Ramayana. Here, you also have a battle over a girl. But at no point do they ever leave and that it's just about those things. But it's all about how Ram is going there. That's the point. You won't think it's anything else other than Lord Ramachandra. Right? Does that make sense? But whether you understand it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead or not, that's another thing. That's why you need Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay?
Even Mahabharata is the same thing. Insult of one girl. Mahabharata is about insult about one girl.
Yeah, true. It's also a battle about one girl. So that's the thing, So maybe this guy heard Ramayana or Mahabharata and decided he's going to write a story, right?
But it seems that the Vedic literature, everybody can find some test.
Yes.
According to the Guna,
Yes. That's the whole idea, is everybody's supposed to be attracted back to Krishna, so therefore there's something for everybody.
Yes.
But the point is that the farther it kind of goes back, then the slower the path is to get there. Yes. But Bhagavatam is the direct path. So now if you read any of these other literatures with that understanding of the Bhagavatam, then that literature itself also now becomes something by how you can directly move forward. But we see is by the language and the writing and all that, the Bhagavatam is written that the Paramahamsas will appreciate, while the other writings may not be as attractive. You know, because it gets too much into secondary aspects. Bhagavatam gets enough just to appreciate and enhance the story. While these others, the secondary is the story. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. These literatures, although worthless in the true sense of the term, are variously decorated to attract the attention of the less intelligent men. Thus, the attracted living entities are more and more entangled in material bondage without hope of liberation for thousands and thousands of generations. Right? So that just means it just goes on for forever. Even though they may be, it means on the mundane platform, especially if it's non-Vedic, then you're not getting anywhere. But if it's Vedic, it's very, very slow. Sri Narada Rishi, being the best among the Vaishnavas, is compassionate towards such unfortunate victims of worthless literatures. And thus he advises Sri Vyasadeva to compose transcendental literature which is not only attractive but can also actually bring liberation from all kinds of bondage. Right? So now he has to give the knowledge of the Vedanta Sutra but in an attractive way. So how to do that? Right? So by hearing and chanting about the Lord's glories, it automatically situates you on the transcendental platform. So liberation is included. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah.
By reading a Sanyavata, there's nothing lost.
No, there's nothing lost. You think there's something lost? No, there's nothing lost. Yes.
So in like all the sampradayas, in order to teach Vedanta Sutra, the first one is to take sannyas, then they start.
Yes.
Because you need to be already on the level of like, no?
Jnana.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to have that detachment and affinity towards knowledge to appreciate it.
Bhagavatam, anybody at any point of time.
Yes, everybody can be included. That's the benefit. That's why Narada Muni wants to catch everybody. Because otherwise, yes, okay, these renounced persons, and they have something. The others have something, but it's going to take them forever. So he wants to speed it up that everybody can. Right? You know, it's just like the glories of the Lord. The Lord coming and performing his pastimes, everyone's going to be benefited, you know, by taking part. It's the most glorious in that. So therefore you see Narada Muni talking to Kamsa to hurry up the process.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's, you know, Krishna will come in his own time, but then Kamsa gets more aggressive, then Krishna comes sooner. So in the same way as by coming and talking to Vyasadeva, then now he'll speak in such a way that it's about Krishna and then everyone will get the benefit.
It seems that it is always the function of Narada Muni to speed the practice.
Yes, because that's the point. Of the Munis, his philosophy is pure bhakti. You know, so then like that. Srila Vyasadeva or his representatives are qualified because they are rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Srila Vyasadeva and his representatives are pure in thought due to their spiritual enlightenment, fixed in their vows due to their devotional service, and determined to deliver the fallen souls rotting in material activities. Right? So that's the thing, Vyasadeva and his representatives. Now, if we're taking an understanding, all the literature that there is, the Vedic literature is the best. Of all the Vedic literature, then we see is that then from the Vedas, then the Puranas are the best. Of the Puranas, the Satvika Puranas, and of the Satvika Puranas, then the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it's about Krishna and pure devotion. Therefore, anybody who's representing that, they're a proper representative. Does that make sense? So if we consider what we're dealing with, then that any devotee who has that faith in you know, Srila Prabhupada's teachings in that, they're within this category. Then within that category, you can say some are more advanced and some are less advanced. Does that make sense? But to take it out of that context and look at it from a mundane platform, is that remove everything else and we just take, we have this, And then, you know, without that context, now we start applying the secondary attributes and then seeing who's qualified or not, as opposed to the primary. Because what makes the Bhagavatam actually the position is its primary attribute. So if we use the secondary, then we'll have problems. I mean, secondary is used in connection with primary, but on its own, then it's not. The fallen souls are very eager to receive novel informations every day, right? Hence the newspaper, and, you know, all these kind of things. Is that they just every day want some new, novel, you know, information. And the transcendentalists like Vyasa or Narada can supply such eager people in general with unlimited news from the spiritual world. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the material world is only a part of the whole creation, and that this earth is only a fragment of the whole material world. Right, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted to have the, you know, his paper going out every day, but the devotees couldn't keep up with it. But, you
know, I heard this Anand Bazar Patrika, it is first started with that idea to give, you know, to publish about the transcendental literatures and all.
Oh, really?
So that's why the most of the primitive writers still write on devotional topics or something which is more valuable.
So that's the Ananda rather than just nice news. Okay. Is it still going? Still going on.
Famous.
Okay.
Completely mundane.
Completely mundane now, okay. There are thousands and thousands of literary men all over the world, and they have created many, many thousands of literary works for the information of the people in general for thousands and thousands of years. Unfortunately, none of them have brought peace and tranquility to the earth, right? From reading Iliad or Odyssey or Gilgamesh or Beowulf, no one has become tranquil. This is due to a spiritual vacuum in those literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures, especially the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, are specifically recommended to suffering humanity to bring about the desired effect of liberation from the pangs of material civilization, which is eating the vital part of human energy. The Bhagavad Gita is the spoken message of the Lord Himself. Right, the vital energy is that Krishna conscious, right? The Bhagavad Gita is the spoken message of the Lord Himself, recorded by Vyasadeva. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental narration of the activities of the same Lord Krishna, which alone can satisfy the hankering desires of the living being for eternal peace and liberation from miseries. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is meant for all the living beings all over the universe, for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. Such transcendental narrations of the pastimes of the Lord can be described only by liberated souls like Vyasadeva and his bona fide representatives, who are completely merged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. No one else can either know or describe the acts of the Lord, even if they speculate on the subject for many, many years. Right? So that's why all these other sages, they can speculate, you won't get anything. So you have to hear from authorized source. So that means then, in this case, Vyasadeva. The descriptions of the Bhagavatam are so precise and accurate that whatever has been predicted in this great literature about 5,000 years ago is now exactly happening. Therefore, the vision of the author comprehends past, present, and future. Such liberated persons, such as Vyasadeva, are perfect not only in the power of vision and wisdom, but also in oral reception, in thinking, feeling, and all other sense activities. Right? So he hears properly, he's heard from authorities, he knows how to think, feel, and will properly. Right down. Liberated person possesses perfect senses. And with perfect senses only can one serve the sense proprietor, Rishikesha, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the perfect description of the all-perfect personality of Godhead by the all-perfect personality Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.13, purport. Okay, so now we're back to the Vritti?
Yeah.
Okay. It might be worthwhile. Oh, I see, because it's just all, that was just within this, it was giving it up. Following Narad's advice, Vyasadeva sat in meditation at his ashram in the Himalayas on the bank of the Saraswati River. What he saw in trance became the basis of the 18,000 verse Srimad Bhagavatam. The natural commentary on his Vedanta Sutras. For an author best knows the purpose of his own work. Srimad Bhagavatam is equivalent to the Vedanta Sutras because it also definitely reconciles all scriptures. Vedanta Sutras and Srimad Bhagavatam both define the Supreme Tattva, the unifier of all truths, as Sarve Veda Yat Padam Amananti, that reality which all the Vedas affirm, Katha Upanishad 2.1.5. Only the Bhagavatam, however, fully explains that supreme truth personally in a way that every honest and sensible person can understand, regardless of birth, training, and past behavior. Mm-hmm. So it's because of Bhagavatam that we're able to take part. Right? Because it's not that we can say as we have the fabulous birth, the training, the past behavior, and all that and stuff like that. Does that make sense? One devotee, what do you call it? His birth, he was born, his family, his mother, they had an apartment where they lived on, Champs-Élysées. Yeah? Right there down in the main area, like that. His training was very nice, he always was up to date on the latest thing happening in, what do you call it? Marie Claire? Yes, like that.
And studying Sorbonne.
Huh?
He was studying Sorbonne.
Yes, like that, and his past behavior, he knew all the different things like that and all that. But that's not why he was able to understand. It's because of Bhagavatam. Right? Like that. But I must admit that from that training he could dress the deities very well.
Yes.
Very, very well.
And he has a special name.
Yes, yes. Like that. How you say it? The Mahavakya of Pujaris.
Yes. Yesterday, through meditation, he saw mainly the Chatushloki.
He saw the whole thing, but the Chatushloki is that key because he was given that. And from that, then meditating on that, he saw the expansion of that and all knowledge that connects with that. Because he knows all the Vedas, but he hasn't compiled them in such a direct fashion. So now, if you know all the Vedas, and then you're given four shlokas that summarize the whole philosophy, now all the verses that connect to each of those Vedas,
yes,
you'll be able to draw.
Yes. Yes.
And then you'll see that. And so this discussion of Maharaj Parikit with Sukadeva Goswami as the core discussion, and that then being discussed between Suta Goswami and the sages, as to make as Sampat. It's like you begin with Sampat Om, you have the mantra, and you end with Om. It's called Sampat. Like the Madhvas use that when they chant Brahma Sutras, they'll go Om Atato Brahma Jigasa, Om Om Shastrayon Itvat, Om Om Satatsu Samanvayat, Om, like that. They'll put it in between each one. Like that. No one else does that, but they do. Because you take it that if you have the one at the beginning of each, then it does. But they want to make sure. So each one is in its own sandwich form. So then you have that perfect connection. Does that make sense? So Suta Goswami at the beginning and end, Parikit Maharaj in the middle. And then it's also being presented by Suta Goswami. So you see his comments, you see Vyasa's comments, even throughout the whole work, like that. Okay, then Baladeva Dibhushan. The meaning of Gayatri is expressed in Janmadhyasyaya Taha, the Lord from whom arises creation and destruction of the universe. Also in the first verse of Bhagavatam. This indicates meditation on Bhagavan, In other words, it indicates the path of pure bhakti. So you're going to have the Supreme Lord. From Him, He's controlling the universe. But it's His expansion that's controlling the universe. Mm-hmm. So it's about Him who, you know, He's controlling the universe. Does that make sense? So it goes back to Bhagavan. Vritti. Gayatri is a direct expansion of the original Vedic syllable Om. And from her expand all of the other mantras. Therefore, she's known as the mother of the Vedas. There are 24 syllables in Gayatri, divided into three sections of 8 syllables each. Like other Vedic and Tantric mantras, Gayatri should be chanted only by those properly initiated into it by a representative of an authentic disciplic succession. Right? So Gayatri is not something that just anyone can chant. That's the unique thing about Hare Krishna, is anyone can chant it. Qualification, no qualification, initiation, no, everyone can chant it. It's a special thing. But you have to hear it from authorized source. That's why we see in the histories of the Acharyas, then someone's mentioned as the non-guru. Does that make sense? We generally take it to mean first initiation, but it doesn't mean that at all. Because in those days, they didn't have first initiation. It was just they had initiation. So non-guru means you've heard the name from an authorized source. Does that make sense? Because the name doesn't require initiation to start chanting. Does that make sense? You know, like we mentioned, that Brahmacharya after Mangalarti, he's the Nama Guru of, you know, millions of Bengalis. Like that. So it's not first initiation, it's just he's Nama Guru. So you see is that it, many times they'll mention who's one of the Acharyas or great personalities, Nama Guru, and who then their Diksha Guru is. Right? And then, depending on what it is, there's 6 gurus are mentioned. Like that. So that may be one person, it may be 2 persons, it may be 3. Like that. But the point is or more, right? The 6 can expand. Sampradaya vihina ye mantraste nishfala mataha. It is understood that whatever mantras you might chant will be fruitless if not received through a bona fide sampradaya, Padma Purana. Such restrictions do not apply to the Bhagavatam. However, anyone may read it. For this reason, Srimad Bhagavatam never directly quotes the Gayatri Mantra, either in the first verse or anywhere else in its 12 cantos. As a general rule, the scriptures do not give away mantras meant for the initiation, initiated by gratuitously quoting them verbatim. When citing such mantras, Shastras almost always invert or leave out some words. That's just standardly how they'll do it. They're just referring, because those who are initiated, they'll know what you're talking about. Those who are not, then they kind of get the idea. Like that. I think only in the Mahanarayana Upanishad, which is the 4th section of the Taittiriya Upanishad, in there all the Gayatris are mentioned. But from what I know of, it's the only place where they're mentioned. But whether they're mentioned fully or whether something is always left out or like this. So that's just the tradition. So you see, Prabhupada's writing it because if he didn't, there would be arguments over how you chant the mantra. So he's written it to make it very clear. But the point is, unless you've received it by initiation, it won't work for you anyway. So there's no benefit in chanting it. Makes sense. But you see is that, like in the others, like the Gaudiya Mat, in their books, they won't give the mantra exactly. They'll put a different word in or different order, or, you know, do something with it like that. And then our devotees thinking that, oh, they'll write it exactly, then see that's different, it's different from ours, and then starts a whole controversy. But this is the standard. But Prabhupada wrote it because otherwise, if not, devotees will argue over it anyway because that's just something you have to do.
When you speak about Gayatri, there are different types of Gayatri.
No, it's all the same. So same, the meter is the same.
Meter
is the same.
But it's always for. Krishna.
No, there can be so many deities.
Any deities?
Yeah, like that. Yeah. We'll get in 9 minutes.
Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Veta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Pradhanam.